to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Hello, welcome to episode 45. Today I'm going to be talking about chapter 5 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Dementor. This is a really important chapter. I wouldn't say it's super heavy. It is heavy. Not the heaviest chapter of the series, but we're introduced to these guards of Azkaban that Harry keeps hearing about. Like, these guards are scary. And now he learns and experiences firsthand how it feels to kind of go up against one of these guards, the Dementors. So it's a big chapter. We meet a really great, I love Lupin. We meet him. He's a really great, important character, one of the Marauders. So this is a cool chapter. There's a lot of hints in this chapter too, so it's going to be really fun. But before I get into chapter discussion and everything like that, I want to do, just my news that I usually do if there's new Wizarding World news and things like that. Of course, the biggest thing is still the TV show and the world's just offering their opinions about it. Some love it, some hate it, somewhere in the middle, I'm kind of personally more on the all for it side, but I also will always love those movies. I adore those movies so much. So I'm still, in that realm of thinking, and I probably always will be. And then I'm excited for it to come out, even though it won't be for a few years. But something recent, in the last 24 hours, I did talk about a few weeks ago how Tokyo is doing a Harry Potter theme park, and it's supposed to open this summer. So a lucky class, it was 30 students in elementary school in Japan, plus the media, they were invited to a preview of the new theme park. It's in Tokyo's Narima Ward, and it's basically a walk around Hogwarts Castle. It was actually yesterday, so Tokyo's way ahead of me time wise. So it happened on the 24th of April, and I'm recording this on the 24th of April right now, 2023. So it looks so cool. The public got a little bit of a video of them walking through it and stuff, just the Great Hall, but it looks so cool. It looks just like the movies, just like the movie said. It's a huge Great Hall, with the lighting and the tables and the silverware and the jugs of water and everything. And then at the top, not stage is a bad word for it, 'cause that's not really what it is, but it's at the front of the room where all the teachers sit and everything. It is so cool. You have Hagrid, you have Flitwick, you have Snape, you have Sprout, you have McGonagall, you have Dumbledore at his little podium, with the owl wings, it shows. And their whole tables too. And you also have the houses, the house points in the front of the room as well. It looks so cool, and I wish they would have shown a little bit more of the rest of the park, but just that peak alone looks amazing, and I can't wait to go someday. It looks super fun. So that's pretty much all the news that I have. I just want to remind everybody, you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, Radio Public, Breaker, and Pocket Casts. You can leave a donation or a voice message in the Anchor link. You can email me at theheiressofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is The Heiress of Slytherin Podcast, and Twitter is at Slytherin Pod. And just a little bit of a brief summary of last week's episode. It was Chapter 4, The Leaky Cauldron, and Harry gets to the Leaky Cauldron, of course, in London, and he has a little bit of freedom. He's able to roam around Diagon Alley, but Diagon Alley only, and he gets his school supplies. He sees the super cool Firebolt, and he also sees some of his other Hogwarts classmates, and Ron and Hermione are there, Ron plus his family, the Weasleys. And so it's the last day of break, and Hermione gets a new cat, Crookshanks. That's her pet, who will become very important in this book. And we also learn that Scabbers isn't doing so well. He's looking feeble, and his whiskers are all messed up, and it looks like he's losing weight. So that's, another hint there. But something like really big that Harry learns is from Mr. and Mrs. Weasley. Like, he wasn't supposed to hear this, but he did. And Harry learns that Sirius Black is after him. Like, Sirius Black is very much hunting down Harry and wanting to kill him. So that's the information that Harry learns at the end of last chapter. And now we're getting into chapter 5 of Harry Potter and Prisoner of Azkaban, The Dementor. So Harry wakes up. Today's the day that they go back to Hogwarts. Last chapter we learned that the Ministry is sending some cars for Mr. Weasley. Not just Mr. Weasley, it's the whole Weasley family plus Hermione and Harry. But Harry learns yesterday, after he found out that Sirius Black is after him, that the cars aren't just a favor to Mr. Weasley because he works in the Ministry. It's because the Ministry doesn't want Harry to die, and the cars are like an extra safety precaution. So Harry gets up. They have to get ready to go to King's Cross. The night before that, Percy was so irritated with Ron, blaming him for things that Fred and George did, just messing with Percy like they like to do. And Percy is taking it all out on Ron. Ron just cannot wait to get back to Hogwarts, because at least at Hogwarts, he can like get away from Percy. And something he mentions, or someone he mentions, I should say, is Penelope Clearwater. So Penelope Clearwater was one of the Muggleborns last year that got petrified. Remember, she got petrified with Hermione. So like at the same time, they were turning the corner and they saw the basilisk's eyes and the reflection of the mirror that Hermione was holding. And Percy was like super distressed and everything. And he was all upset. And Jenny knew a secret about him, and she was about to tell Ron and Harry, but then Percy came and like interrupted her. Jenny was going to tell them like, oh, I'm the one who was behind the attacks or whatever because of the diary. And she never got to it because Percy interrupted her. But she did know something about Percy. And Percy knew she knew because, you know, they discussed it. She walked in on him kissing Penelope Clearwater, like in a classroom. That was his secret girlfriend, right? So now she's not a secret. Now the secret's out that like the Weasleys, they know that he has a girlfriend. It's Penelope Clearwater. She's another prefect. And he's accusing Ron of dripping tea on his picture of Penelope. So just, you know, a little information there. Penelope Clearwater, that was the like secret girlfriend from last book. Harry wants to tell Ron about what he learned Ron's parents discussing last night, that Sirius Black is after him. He doesn't get the chance to just yet because Fred and George come in and interrupt them. Then they head down to breakfast. And when they get down to breakfast, they hear Mrs. Weasley telling Hermione and Jenny about a love potion she made as a young girl, and the three of them are just giggling about it. This is not something to, like, be giggly about. I mean, in the context, like, Hermione and Jenny and Mrs. Weasley all think it's, like, super funny. But at the same time, think about, like, how dark it is. There's three unforgivable curses. Killing curse, torture curse, and a controlling curse. So that's Crucio, Imperio, and Avada Kedavra. Those are all three unforgivable curses. And you go straight to Azkaban if you use those curses. I mean, Voldemort and his Death Eaters use them all the time. But those are unforgivable. They're very much illegal. But you would think that there should be more unforgivable curses. For one thing, Obliviate. That's the memory charm. So that takes away someone's memory. You can take away as many or as little memories as you want from someone. That's really bad. The Ministry does it. I mean, the Ministry does it because they have to. Like Muggles, if they see something or they learn or hear something or whatever about the Wizarding World, they will obliviate them in order to remove that memory because they don't want Muggles to know about magic and everything. So that, I do understand that component of that. But I mean, otherwise, like Lockhart from last year, we learned that he was doing all of the memory charms on witches and wizards and taking credit for their life's work. Like, that's really bad. That kind of situation. And, you know, sometimes it could be life-saving. Hermione does it to a Death Eater in the 7th book, and it's very important that she does. But that's like one example of a curse, like some circumstances that is just totally not forgivable, you know? Same with love potions. It's not a curse or whatever, but it's a potion. But it could be very dangerous and very, very manipulative. I'm going to use two examples of this love potion of how it's pretty bad. Well, actually, I could do three. I'll do the third one briefly. So the first one, Voldemort. His mother, Merope Gaunt, was absolutely in love with this Muggle, Tom Riddle, who lived like near the village she lived at or whatever. And we'll learn more about this in the sixth book, of course. But Tom Riddle was nowhere near interested at all in Merope Gaunt, like not at all. And she made a love potion and she kept him underneath that love potion for like a year. So that made him think that he absolutely loved her and everything. And they had a baby, like he got her pregnant under that love potion. So, you know, that's considered rape. He had no control over what he was doing, anything at all. She was very much manipulating him through that. And she wasn't doing it to be malicious. She was doing it because she really loved this man. And when she removed the love potion, she thought that he might love her. And he absolutely did not. And he couldn't believe that underneath the love potion, he married her and whatever, right? He absolutely loved her. And he even told people, like, I don't know, it was like I was under some sort of magic. You know, nobody believed him, of course. But he was underneath a love potion because he had no control over his thoughts, actions, like nothing at all. She was very much manipulating him. And I did say she didn't do it to be malicious. And like in her eyes, in her head, that really wasn't her intent, even though the intent totally seems that way. So that's the first instance. And that's also why Voldemort is incapable of loving, because he was conceived under a love potion. That's not real love. That's not genuine. So there's that example. Another example I want to use is in Fantastic Beasts. Queenie uses a love potion on Jacob. And, you know, we've seen it's in the second movie is where she does that, because he doesn't want her to have to like hide and like get in trouble, because in Wizarding America in those times, like in the 20s, wizards and witches couldn't marry muggles, and he was very much like didn't want to get her in trouble and like all this stuff. He didn't think he was anything special to be with her, blah blah blah. He loved her, but it just was not, he didn't feel right about it. He didn't like being manipulated under her control like that. And Newt is the one who's like, Queenie, you need to get him out of that love potion, because that's not living, you know, you're under somebody else's control. And the next example I want to talk about is Mermilla Devane. It's in the sixth book. She puts a love potion in chocolates and she sends it to Harry, and Ron eats them instead. And he's very much like infatuated with Mermilla Devane and thinks he loves her and everything. So, and then he almost dies because he drinks poisoned mead, and then Harry saves him. So that's kind of besides the point. Either way, love potions, dangerous, not good. And Mrs. Weasley, like her saying this, like I would have loved to get a little more context. Like, was it on Mr. Weasley? Did she just do it in potions class for fun? You know? So a little bit of a mention there of like why love potions are not good and they should be considered something, you know, almost on par or on par with unforgivable curses, because like think of predators using them. They absolutely would, right? So dangerous. And the fact that Jenny, Hermione, and Mrs. Weasley are giggling about it is a little bit interesting. So the Weasleys plus Hermione and Harry, they have breakfast and they get all their trunks and get ready to like pack everything into the cars to go. So as they go into the cars, the first car Harry gets into, and it's him, Hermione, Ron, and it says to Ron's disgust, Percy. So, you know, Ron is not happy with Percy right now, and he's just annoyed. You know how you get annoyed with your siblings and everything. The ride there to King's Cross Station is pretty uneventful. But once they do get to King's Cross Station and get inside and, you know, have all their trunks and stuff and get through the platform, Mr. Weasley pulls Harry aside and says that he needs to speak to him about something. And he starts to tell him about Black and everything, right? I feel weird saying Black because it's Sirius, right? Once after the end of this book, Harry knows him as Sirius, but throughout this book, he knows him as Black or Sirius Black. So it's like when Harry and Mr. Weasley and the teachers and whoever are saying Black, it's like, because it's like, oh, it's like Malfoy, like, you know what I mean? Voldemort. It's like a one word. It's not a Harry, Hermione, just like how Snape will refer to the Weasleys as Weasley or Harry as Potter. You know what I mean? It's like they're saying the last name to just be like short and curt. And so I feel weird saying Black when Harry's about to know him as Sirius after this book. But so Mr. Weasley starts to tell him about Sirius, but he says Black. And Harry tells him, oh, I already know. And he says that he overheard them last night. Mr. Weasley is a little bit you know, kind of anxious. He was like, oh, that's not the way I would have liked for you to found out. Like, sorry about that. And Harry said, like, it's honestly, it's okay. And he also tells him, like, you must be really scared, Harry. Harry says, I'm not, like, really, because Mr. Weasley does not believe him. And then he tells him, I'm not trying to be a hero, but seriously, Sirius Black, he does say Sirius Black, can't be worse than Voldemort, can he? And Mr. Weasley, you know, he doesn't like the sound of the name of Voldemort, so he flinches a little bit. But he says, Harry, I knew you were, well, made of stronger stuff than Fudge seems to think. I'm obviously pleased that you're not scared, but... And Mrs. Weasley cuts him off. And it's like, Arthur, the train's about to go. Like, they gotta go on the train. And so Mr. Weasley says, like, he's going, just hold on. And he tells Harry to give him his word. And where he says, listen, I want you to give me your word. Harry cuts him off and says, that'll be a good boy and stay in the castle. And so Mr. Weasley, it looks more serious than Harry has ever seen him. And he says, Harry, swear to me you won't go looking for Black. And so Harry is just kind of like, what? He's can't even believe what he's hearing, like, looking for Black. And then Mr. Weasley says, promise me, Harry, whatever happens. And then Harry says, why would I go looking for someone I know wants to kill me? And again, these movies are so great. And this whole conversation, it's, you know, very similar dialogue to the movie, or the movie is similar to the book, I should say. And I love the way, like, the line delivery again, like, it's so good. And then the music plays, oh, it's just so good. But Harry, really, that line is very good. Why would I go looking for someone I know wants to kill me? And so Mr. Weasley still says, like, swear to me that whatever you might hear, because Mr. Weasley suspects he might hear some things that are going to make Harry want to go after Black and, like, seek some revenge. Mrs. Weasley yells at him, like, come on, they gotta go. So Harry has to run to the compartment door, and Ron opens it for him, and he gets on the train. Something I did forget to mention, too, that happens, like, just before Mr. Weasley pulls Harry aside, is that Percy sees Penelope, like, on the platform, and Ginny catches Harry's eye, and they both turn away, like, laughing, because they know Percy just looks so ridiculous. He's, like, standing up super straight with his chest puffed out so that his badge, his head boy badge, is, like, very much, like, the first thing people will see with the way he's walking, because he just looks ridiculous. So I forgot to mention that, and it's funny. So Harry tells Ron and Hermione that he needs to speak to them in private, and Ginny just happens to be, like, standing there while they're on the train, and Ron tells her to go away. He's just being an older brother, you know, but she's like, oh, that's nice, and just, like, walks away. So they walk down the train. They keep searching for an empty compartment, but every single one is full. Like, they're all full, and there's not an empty compartment. But there is one compartment with only one person in there, and it's just a man who's asleep next to the window, and they're kind of confused because the Hogwarts Express is usually just for students. So they're, like, seeing this grown man here asleep is very strange because they've never seen an adult on the train ever, except for the witch who pushes the trolley cart with, like, all the treats and stuff like that. So he's described as wearing an extremely shabby set of wizard's robes that had been darned in several places. He looks ill and exhausted, and looks young, and he has light brown hair, but it has some gray in it. So this is Professor Lupin. So Remus Lupin, huge important character. He's Moony of the Marauders. He is a werewolf. He was one of Harry's dad's best friends growing up. And now he's lived a life of poverty because werewolves are very much shunned in the wizarding world. So Ron, this is the only place the only compartment, and this is where they have to sit. So Ron is kind of like, okay, well, who do you think he is? And Hermione says, Professor R.J. Lupin, right away. And Ron's like, how in the world do you even know that? And she says it's on his case, because it's on the suitcase. It's, like, engraved, Professor R.J. Lupin. And I will be playing a clip of that from the movie, because I just love the exchange and the way that the actors say that part. And Ron, being ever so, you know, the detective that he is not, he says, wonder what he teaches. And Hermione says, it's obvious. There's only one vacancy, Defense Against the Dark Arts. This is their new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And again, there's a mention here about how there's rumors that the job is jinxed because there's a new teacher every year. And Ron, I have to read this part because it's so funny. He says, "Well, I hope he's up to it," said Ron doubtfully. "He looks like one good hex would finish him off, doesn't he?" Anyway, and he asks Harry, like, "What were you going to tell us?" So that's Ron and, like, Lupin being asleep. It's funny. They assume that he really is asleep, but I don't know about that. Maybe he's just good at faking being asleep. And basically Ron saying that one good hex might, you know, finish him off is basically just emphasizing that Lupin very much looks poor and shabby and worn down. So Ron just hopes he's up to teaching them defense against the dark arts. And here's that little clip of that exchange between Ron and Hermione.
Who do you think that is?
Professor R.J. Lupin.
You know everything. How is it she knows everything?
It's on a suitcase, Ronald.
Oh.
So Harry explains to Ron and Hermione the argument between Mr. and Mrs. Weasley that he heard and the warning that Mr. Weasley just gave him before he boarded the train. And when he finishes, Ron looks thunderstruck. Hermione is in complete awe, like her hands are over her mouth. She's so worried for Harry. And she's saying, like, he really escaped to come after you. Like, and she's telling him, Harry, you have to be really, really careful. Don't go looking for trouble, Harry. And Harry says, I don't go looking for trouble. Trouble usually finds me. That's another really, like, famous Harry Potter quote. Like, I mean, Harry Potter as in the series, but also Harry Potter as in the character. Like, that's an important famous quote. He says, I don't go looking for trouble. Trouble usually finds me. And this isn't completely accurate, Harry. You kind of do go looking for trouble sometimes. I mean, maybe it's not always, like, on purpose, but sometimes it is. One example I will use is the Midnight Duel in the first book. Malfoy challenges Harry to a wizard's duel in the first book, and that's, like, you know, Harry goes and accepts and goes at midnight and sneaks out to go and do this duel. So sometimes he does go looking for trouble, and that's the example I want to use. Ron also says, like, how thick would Harry have to be to go looking for a nutter who wants to kill him? And he says it like he's scared. Like, Harry did not expect Ron and Hermione to be taking the news this badly. They're not taking it well. Like, Hermione and Ron both seem to be way more frightened of Black than Harry is, because Ron is saying, like, no one knows how he got out of Azkaban, because no one's ever done it before, and he wasn't just some random prisoner, he was, like, a top security prisoner, and he's escaped. And so Hermione is like, okay, well, they'll catch him, because everyone's looking for him, even the Muggles are gonna be looking for him. But then they start hearing, like, a little whistling noise. It's like, it sounds like a tiny little noise coming from somewhere, and Ron says, oh, it's coming from your trunk, Harry. And it's the sneakoscope. The one that Ron got for Harry for his birthday that he sent to him. It's supposed to, like, spin and light up whenever there's someone untrustworthy around. And big hint, there is. It's Peter Pettigrew disguised, like, you know, in his animagus form as Scabbers right now. That is the untrustworthy person that's around. So Ron's like, oh, it's a cheap one. It went haywire just as I was tying it to Errol's leg. And Hermione's like, okay, well, were you around someone untrustworthy, or were you doing something untrustworthy? And Ron said, well, I wasn't supposed to be using Errol. Like, there's your answer. Like, it does work. It's not because it's cheap. Like, it does work. So Harry's like, oh, just stick it back in the trunk. I don't want it to wake up this guy, because Lupin's still there sleeping. So Ron's like, okay, we'll just get it checked when we're in Hogsmeade. They sell that sort of thing in Dervish and Bang. So that's, like, the magical instrument store. That is in Hogsmeade that the twins told Ron about. But Harry doesn't think he's going to be able to go. And Hermione's perks up right away. She's like, oh yeah, that's, like, the only entirely non-Muggle settlement in Britain. I'm so excited to go. But they've gotten their permission slip signed. You know, Harry hasn't. And something else mentioned here is Honeydukes. That's the sweet shop there. And Ron's like, oh, I can't wait to go. And he mentions things like pepper imps that make you, like, smoke at the mouth. They have choco balls that are full of strawberry mousse and clotted cream. They have sugar quills. And it's just, you know, lots of fun stuff that Ron can't wait to go. And I would love to go to Hogsmeade. And I would especially love to visit Honeydukes, especially because Ron, he just keeps carrying on with, like, descriptions. And at the same time, Hermione is like, oh, it's so interesting and historical because it was the site of a 1612 goblin rebellion. She read that in a book called Sites of Historical Sorcery. And she also mentions the Shrieking Shack, how it's supposed to be the most severely haunted building in Britain. Shrieking Shack is very important because in this book, a whole showdown goes on in the Shrieking Shack. So a little bit of background. The Shrieking Shack is where the Whomping Willow leads, like in the tunnel that goes underground. And that is where Dumbledore, you know, once Lupin, who was became a werewolf when he was 5, when he was bitten, he allowed the Shrieking Shack to be a place where Lupin could transform comfortably and not harm anybody. But people say it's haunted because his howls and his shrieks, because he couldn't bite anybody, he was biting himself. And he was very much like, you know, he was in pain and hollering and yelling and screaming and screeching and making all his werewolf noises. So that's why the villagers all think that it's the most severely haunted building in Britain, is because of those noises that Lupin was making when he was doing his werewolf transformations in there. So something else like that Ron's going on about is these sherbet balls that make you levitate a few inches, like while you're like sucking on them. So that's just, you know, I love the mentions of like the descriptions of the candy and food and everything in the Wizarding World. So wanted to mention that. But Hermione kind of notices that Harry's not really into this conversation. And she's like, oh, it'll be nice to go, won't it? And Harry's like, well, you'll have to tell me when you go, you know, when you find out. And he says that he can't go because the Dursleys and Fudge did not sign his permission form. And so Ron looked horrified. He looks horrified that Harry can't go to Hogsmeade. And he's saying, oh, they'll have to let you go. Maybe McGonagall or someone will give you permission or sign your slip. And Harry just gives a laugh like McGonagall is super strict. And something Ron offers is like, well, you know what? We'll just ask the twins. They know every secret passage out of the castle. And Hermione is like, you know what? No, Ron, how could you say that? Like, Harry shouldn't be sneaking out of the castle with Black on the loose. And you know what? Hermione is absolutely correct. It's very dangerous, even though Harry isn't really scared. But it is dangerous, you know? But Harry is very much his father's son, and he's mischievous and daring, and he has a lot of nerve, and he wants to go and have fun in Hogsmeade. So it's gonna happen. But it is true. Like, Hermione is, she's right. She has a point here. She's the voice of reason here, as per usual. And Harry says, there's no way McGonagall will let me anyways, Ron. Like, she knows that Black's probably out to get me, just like all the adults do. So there's no way she's gonna let me. And then Ron, I have to read this part too because it's so funny. But if we're with him, said Ron spiritedly to Hermione, Black wouldn't dare. Oh, Ron, don't talk rubbish, snapped Hermione. Black's already murdered a whole bunch of people in the middle of a crowded street. Do you really think he's going to worry about attacking Harry just because we're there? And that's true. Like, Ron, come on, be practical. Let's be realistic here. Like, based on the information they know about Black, like, he's not going to care. He'll kill you guys too. He really won't, because Sirius Black is not the man they think he is. But they don't know that yet. But I do think it's Hermione, or I think it's funny that Hermione is like, Ron, don't talk rubbish, because it's true. Like, what are you doing? So in this moment, Hermione, as she's like talking to Ron about him talking rubbish or whatever, she's fumbling with the straps of Crookshank's basket that he's in. And Ron's like, don't let him out. Or he says, don't let that thing out. And right away, Crookshanks like comes out of the basket that he's in, and he leaps onto Ron, and he's going for Scabbers, right? And so he's like shoving Crookshanks off, and Hermione's mad at him for doing that. And right in that moment, like Lupin like kind of moves, right? But he just turns his head the other way and keeps sleeping. I don't know if he's really sleeping though, but apparently he is. So the train just keeps going on and takes a few hours to get there, right? So by 1 o'clock, the trolley witch comes and offers like food and snacks and treats and everything. And then Ron asks if they should wake Lupin up, because Ron says he looks like he could do with some food, because again, like that's his appearance. Like Ron's like, this guy needs some nutrients. So Hermione cautiously like tries to wake him up and everything, but he doesn't move. So the witch is like, okay, don't worry. Like, I'll be at the front with the driver if he wakes up and wants like snacks later. So Harry gets cauldron cakes too. I should mention he does get a little snack. And once the witch, you know, walks away, Ron asks, I suppose he is asleep? I mean, he hasn't died, has he? Like, this is the thing. Ron like really is concerned about his appearance, because he just looks like ill and sickly and everything, right? But Hermione's like, no, he's breathing. Like, it's fine. It might not be the coolest thing for these 13-year-old people, wizards, witch, to be in the compartment with their teacher, but it does have its perks because around mid-afternoon, Draco, Crab, and Goyle. I mean, I felt weird saying Draco because I didn't say Vincent or Gregory because those are Crab and Goyle's first names, but Malfoy, Crab, and Goyle go to the apartment. You know, they're just going to like mess with them because they're just mean bullies and everything. He says, look who it is, Potty and the Weasel. And Crab and Goyle think that it's just like the funniest thing. And so Malfoy takes the opportunity to make fun of Ron and his family. And he says, I heard your father finally got his hands on some gold this summer, Weasley. Did your mother die of shock? And at this moment, Malfoy like hears the snorts Lupin gives, right? Because Lupin's not really asleep, you guys. Like, come on, let's be real here. He gives like a little snort, right? And so Malfoy's like, wait, who's that? And then Harry's like, oh yeah, new teacher. Continue with what you were saying, Malfoy. And then Malfoy like knows like, okay, like he's not dumb enough to like attack them with words or spells while a teacher's there and present and everything. So they decide to just leave, but still it's like annoying. And Ron decides to say, once like they walk away, I'm not going to take any crap from Malfoy this year. I mean it. If he makes one more crack about my family, I'm going to get hold of his head. And he makes like a violent gesture in midair. And Ron's like, or Hermione's like, Ron, be careful. But honestly, good for you, Ron. You shouldn't take anything from Malfoy. Like, power to you. Like, don't let him mess with you. Because Malfoy is just a mean person. So stay tuned for this podcast to see if Ron does stick to his word about that. So time still goes on. Lupin's still asleep. It's raining outside. And the train starts to get slower. And it gets slower and slower and slower. Then it stops. And Ron's like, oh, great, I'm starving. Like, I can't wait to get to the feast. But Hermione's like, we can't be there yet. Like, it has enough time hasn't passed because she's looking at her watch. So the train goes black. Everyone's confused, like, along the whole carriage. Heads are sticking out of their compartments because they're like, okay, what's going on? Why have we stopped? Why is it pitch black? And it's complete darkness. And Neville and Jenny are kind of walking around. They stumble in because they're like, oh, what's going on? Because they're all, like, confused. They don't know if they've broken down. It's, like, pitch black. They can't see anything. People are stepping on shoes, whatever. Like, stuff is going on. And so Ron says, there's something moving out there. I think I see, like, people coming aboard. And something is moving out there. And it's not people that are coming aboard. I have in my notes here. Oh, boy. So Lupin wakes up. And he appears to be holding a handful of flames. And it's not necessarily a handful of flames. It's a spell, of course. But I like this because I love Avatar The Last Airbender. And, like, holding a handful of flames reminds me of, like, firebending. So I don't think Lupin would be a firebender at all. But I do like that description. Like, it looks like he's holding a handful of flames. And he speaks to them and he tells them to stay where you are. He has, like, a very hoarse voice. Like, he tells them to be quiet first and then he tells them to stay where they are. And as he's getting up to go towards like the doorway, a cloaked figure that towers to the ceiling. So it's like a big, tall, cloaked figure. Its face is completely hidden beneath its hood. That's what opens, it like slides open the compartment door. And Harry's eyes dart downward and what he saw made his stomach contract. So this is a description of the Dementor. It's the hand that's protruding. It's scabbed, glistening, grayish, slimy looking. It looks like something dead that decayed in water. But the hand is only visible for like a second because as though the creature beneath the cloak sensed Harry's gaze, the hand was suddenly withdrawn into the folds of its black cloak. So this is like the hand was out because it was opening the compartment like with like, you know, it's the magic that it has. It wasn't like holding the handle and sliding it open, but in the movie, it's a really cool description. It basically like has an open palm and just kind of like makes like a grabbing motion. And then it does that in the movie. So that's how the Dementor opens the door or the compartment door. And I'm going to read this next section here about like the description of the Dementor and what's going on. And then the thing beneath the hood, whatever it was, drew a long, slow, rattling breath as though it were trying to suck something more than air from its surroundings, which is exactly what it's doing. An intense cold swept over them all. Harry felt his own breath catch inside his chest. The cold went deeper than his skin. It was inside his chest. It was inside his very heart. Harry's eyes rolled up into his head. He couldn't see. He was drowning in cold. There was a rushing in his ears as though of water. He was being dragged downward, the roaring growing louder. And then, from far away, he heard screaming, terrible, terrified, pleading screams. He wanted to help whoever it was. He tried to move his arms, but couldn't. A thick white fog was swirling around him, inside him. And that's like the end of that description, because then he hears, Harry, Harry, are you all right? Someone's like slapping his face. So he fainted. And a dementor, you know, caused that to happen. It was sucking like the happiness from Harry, because Harry, he has gone through most, the most traumatic, distressful, sad events out of anyone like on that train. And so, I mean, Lupin's gone through a lot too, but I mean, and these other students, they all have their own, you know, past, but Harry in particular, he's the one that's gone through like the most, right? So the dementors really, really affect him like very deeply. And so that's why he passed out in this moment. He hates that because he feels like weak and everything, and he's the only one that did. So as Harry wakes up, he sees Professor Lupin, Ron and Hermione, Neville, Jenny's there too. They're all kind of looking down at him. And Harry feels very sick. He feels like a cold sweat on his face as he tries to push his glasses up. And Ron and Hermione like kind of help him up into a seat. And Harry says he's okay. But like, what happened? What was that thing? Because he remembers that hooded figure. Like, what was that? Who screamed? And Ron is like, no one screamed. He's very nervous right now. And Jenny and Neville look back at him and they look really pale too. And Harry's confused because he's like, no, I heard screaming. And then suddenly they all hear a really loud snap. And that was Professor Lupin. He was breaking an enormous slab of chocolate into pieces. And he tells him, here, eat it. It'll help. Harry takes it, but he doesn't eat it. So chocolates are not like a defense against dementors. But afterward, chocolate does help you feel a little bit better. Lupin explains to Harry that was a dementor, one of the dementors of Azkaban. And he's like, okay, I need to go speak to the driver. Like, eat that. It'll help. And so Hermione's like, are you sure you're okay, Harry? And Harry still is like, he doesn't understand. He's very confused. He's really anxious. He's kind of like, I don't get it. What happened? And so then they all start to explain to him that dementor stood there and like, seems to kind of look around, but they're not sure because they can't really, you know, see its face. And Harry went like rigid, and because they thought he was having a fit, and then he went rigid and fell out of his seat and started twitching. And Lupin stepped over him, pulled out his wand, and, you know, did the Patronus charm, which they are going to learn soon. Or I guess Harry specifically is going to learn soon. And so he told them that, well, I guess before Lupin did the Patronus charm, he said that none of us have Sirius Black under our cloaks in here, and go. But the dementor didn't listen, and that's when the silvery thing shot out of his wand, and that's the Patronus charm. So maybe I'm, you know, putting too much pressure on Hermione here, but I'm a little bit surprised that she didn't know this. It's common-ish knowledge, you know, in the Wizarding world that Patronus charms are what keep dementors at bay. That's the only spell you can use against them. And so I'm really surprised that Hermione didn't really know what this silvery thing was, that this was a Patronus charm. I mean, this is like the only spell Hermione ever really has trouble with. And it's kind of unfortunate. Like, that's something that Harry says in Deathly Hallows. He's like, well, this is the only spell she really ever has trouble with. It's a Patronus charm. So it's a little, I guess, like, kind of foreshadowing, like, she doesn't know which it is, and then she has trouble with it. Like, I don't know, I just think it's interesting that I thought that Hermione would have known, like, oh, that's Patronus charm. But again, maybe I'm just putting like too much pressure on Hermione. And so Neville says, like, I felt it was horrible, like, I felt all cold. Did you guys feel that cold when that dementor came in? And Ron's like so uncomfortable, and he's saying that he felt weird, like he'd never be cheerful again. And that's like the feeling that dementors give you, like, they suck like all the happiness out of you, especially those like Harry who have gone through a lot. They are going to be affected like even more extremely. So, and Jenny, like, she is kind of crying right now. She gives like a small sob, and Hermione goes to comfort her. So Jenny, she's, you know, she's seen some stuff too because of the whole thing last year with Tom Riddle, aka Voldemort, you know, all of that, all those events from that, from last year, that's really, like, that affects her too. And that's probably what she just relived, and, like, whatever the dementias did to her, like, the effect they had on her was most likely from last year's events, which were very traumatizing to her. So Harry is feeling shameful. He feels really weak and shivery, like he's recovering from, like, a bad case of the flu. He doesn't know why he had, like, why he fell apart like that. Like, he had gone to pieces, but everyone else around him was fine. No one else fainted. And like I've said, it's because they affect him more because of the sorrow that he has in his past. So that's why he's, like, more affected than everybody else. But he doesn't like that. He feels shameful. Like, he doesn't, and he feels kind of, like, he feels embarrassed about that. And so Lupin comes back and he tells Harry, I haven't poisoned that chocolate. So Harry just, like, takes a bite, and he, right away when he takes that bite, he feels, like, warmth just, like, spread throughout his body, and he feels a lot better. And Lupin says they'll be at Hogwarts in 10 minutes, and he asks Harry, like, are you okay? And Harry says he's fine. And then the rest of the ride, like, those 10 minutes, they don't really talk, you know, that whole fiasco, the Dementors kind of took a lot out of them. So they get to the platform, it's freezing, the rain is just pouring down, and they hear a familiar voice telling first years to follow him, and it's Hagrid. And so they're making their, like, traditional journey across the lake. Hagrid is the one that takes the first years in those boats. Hagrid sees the trio and asks, are you guys all right? But in the trio waves, they don't actually get a chance to, like, talk to him. They all want to get out of the rain and everything, and since they're third years, they don't go with Hagrid. They go to where there's, like, 100 stagecoaches that await the students. And Harry assumes that they're pulled by invisible horses, because as soon as they get inside the carriage, like, the coach sets off by itself. And no, Harry, they're not invisible horses. They are Thestrals. And those are creatures, like, big wings, horse Pegasus-like creatures. They're black and they're big. And you can only see them once you've personally seen death with your own eyes, seen someone die. And the reason that Harry cannot see these Thestrals yet, he doesn't see them until his fifth year, is because he did see his mother die right in front of him with his own eyes, but he was little. He was a year old. He didn't know what was happening. He didn't know that's what death was. He couldn't put a name to what he saw. So that's why Harry doesn't see the Thestrals yet. He does see them in his fifth year, though, because he does see Cedric Diggory die in front of him, and he understands in that moment as a 14-year-old that's death. But when he was a little one-year-old, he didn't know. So that's why he thinks it's invisible horses, but it's not. It's Thestrals, and you can only see them once you see someone die. So after the Battle of Hogwarts, for sure, like, almost all the students will definitely see these Thestrals. So as they're getting closer to the school, they see that there's, like, a bunch more Dementors. They're guarding, like a bunch of entrances and, like, standing guard or floating guard or whatever. And he just feels that coldness again. It, like, engulfs him, and it's like a sickly feeling. He just has to close his eyes and wait till they get through the gates, and he just, like, hates it, right? And so as soon as it gets to a halt, Ron, Hermione, and Harry, they all step out, and then they hear a voice, a delighted voice, saying, you fainted, Potter? Is Longbottom telling the truth? You actually fainted? And it's Malfoy. You know, he's the one. He makes fun of Harry for fainting, and Ron tells him to shove off, and he's like, oh, did you faint too, Weasley? Did a scary old Dementor scare you? He's just being Malfoy, right? And Lupin, just in time, he had just gone off the next carriage, and he's like, oh, is there a problem? And Malfoy's like, no, Professor. And then him and Crabbe and Goyle walk away. So they all go up towards the steps to the castle, and they get into the Great Hall, and then they hear a voice. It's McGonagall. She's saying, Potter, Granger, I want to see you both. And it's McGonagall. You know, she's the Transfiguration teacher, head of Gryffindor House. She's calling their names over the crowd. And Harry's like, doesn't have a good feeling about this. He's like, oh no, am I in trouble? Did I do something? Like, he doesn't know. He's like, what is going on? And so McGonagall's like, oh, you don't need to look so worried. I just need a quick word with both of you. And then Weasley, she's like, move along there, Weasley. Ron's like, oh, okay. So because she only needs to see Harry and Hermione. So they go, like, against the crowd, go up into her office, and she talks to both of them, like, at the same time, basically, but Harry first, addressing him specifically. And she says that Lupin sent an owl ahead to say that he was ill on the train. And he can't even reply because there's a knock on a door and Madame Pomfrey just comes in. And she's like attending to Harry and he's saying, no, I'm fine. Like, I don't need anything. And then Madame Pomfrey is like, oh yeah, you've been doing something dangerous again. Like, just assuming. And Harry's like, I don't like the way that she says this. Like, as if, like, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a bad thing if Harry's doing something dangerous. But, like, she says it, like, in an annoying way, you know? Like, as if he was doing something bad and dangerous. And then McGonagall is like, nope, it was a Dementor, Poppy. And then her and McGonagall exchange a look, and then she's like, oh, okay. And then she's saying, like, they shouldn't even, like, Dementors in a school, they shouldn't be here, you know, like, all this stuff. He's not going to be the first one, or he's not going to be the last one who collapses and everything. She talks about how terrible the Dementors are, and she's saying, like, they have, like, this bad effect on people who are delicate. And Harry's like, I'm not delicate. And Madame Pomfrey, not really paying attention, is like, yeah, of course you're not. So McGonagall's asking, like, what does he need? Does he need to go to the hospital wing? And Harry just, like, stands up. He's like, no, I'm fine. And he thinks about what Malfoy would say, like, if he went to the hospital wing. Like, that's just torture to him. He's like, no, I'm fine. Madame Pomfrey's like, well, at the very least, you should have some chocolate. And Lupin's like, or sorry, Harry's like, I already got some. Lupin, Professor Lupin gave some to me on the train. He gave it to all of us. And that surprises Madame Pomfrey, like a pleasant surprise. She approves. She's like, okay, we finally have a defense against a dark arts teacher who knows what he's doing. He knows his remedies. So that's, you know, it's a good little hint and some motivation for her defense against a dark arts teacher this year. Like, finally, someone who knows what they're doing. So again, McGonagall's like, are you sure you're okay? Harry's like, yeah, fine. McGonagall's like, okay, so go ahead and just wait outside. I'm going to talk to Miss Granger in private. Then we can all walk down to the feast together. So Harry walks back out into the corridor, and he only has to wait for a few minutes because Hermione emerges looking very happy pretty quickly. And the three of them walk down to the Great Hall. So the thing that Hermione is looking very happy about is the Time Turner. Hermione is the brightest witch of her age, so bright and so eager and completely capable of taking, like, a bunch of extra classes that McGonagall wrote to the Ministry of Magic explaining this, and they are lending her a time turner to use so that she can attend all her classes. So basically she's going to go to, like, so say 11 o'clock, say she has three classes that day at 11. She's going to go to one class, and then she's going to use the time turner to go back in time and go sit in on the other classes. So this is really extreme. Remember in the chapter before this, Hermione was like, oh, I can't wait to take this class and this class and this class. And she had her three huge bags of, like, all her books. Harry and Ron, like, are like, okay, it's Hermione. But they're going to start noticing very soon, like, this is weird. Why? What? When did she get here? When does she have time for this? And it's because of the time turner. So this is what McGonagall was talking to Hermione about just now. But she told Hermione, you can't tell anybody. Only, like, the professors and Dumbledore and Hermione know. Doesn't even tell Harry and Ron. Harry doesn't find out until, like, one of the last chapters of the book anyways, when it's important and Dumbledore, like, tells them to use the time turner. But this is what McGonagall was talking to Hermione about just now, like, the time turner, she gave it to her. And that's why Hermione is so excited and so eager and so motivated to start the school year and do all of these, like, learning, all this learning and all her new classes. So they get to the Great Hall, and Ron saved Harry and Hermione's seats, and Harry's about to explain, like, why McGonagall pulled them back. But before he can, Professor Dumbledore is addressing the room. He's giving his speech. And Harry, he feels calm. Even the sight of Dumbledore just makes him, like, calm, and he feels just better instantly. And I like this sentence here. You couldn't help trusting Albus Dumbledore. And as Harry watched him beaming around at the students, he felt really calm for the first time since the Dementor had entered the train compartment. So just calming presence, safety, comfort, that's what Dumbledore gives off to probably, like, all the students, but to Harry too, especially after that whole Dementor fiasco. So his welcome speech, he's saying, welcome to another year at Hogwarts. He has a few things to say to him, and one of them is very serious. He's saying, like, as you all are aware, like, after the Hogwarts Express events, like, an hour ago or whatever, our school is playing host to the Dementors of Azkaban, who are here on Ministry of Magic business. And this is where Harry remembers when Mr. Weasley was saying that Dumbledore was not happy that Dementors are guarding the school. So that's just like a recall to the conversation he overheard with Mrs. and Mr. Weasley. So Dumbledore is saying, like, while they're here, nobody can leave the school without permission. Dementors are not going to be fooled by tricks or disguises or even invisibility cloaks. So the way I just read that sentence, I emphasize invisibility cloaks. Dumbledore didn't emphasize it. He actually adds invisibility cloaks blandly, like in a bland voice. And Harry and Ron glance at each other. This is 1,000,000% directed at Harry. Like, you cannot go wandering in your invisibility cloak, which is something that Harry still ends up doing. But he, like, I just think it's so funny he said that, like, in the speech, welcome speech, addressing the entire school, and it's literally just meant for Harry because no one else has an invisibility cloak. So I just think it's so funny. And no one has a cloak like Harry's. Harry's is a literal Deathly Hallow, which we'll learn about in the 7th book. But basically, Harry's is like the OG invisibility cloak. There are other cloaks of invisibility that are described that some people might have, but not like Harry's. Harry's never gets worn out, never loses its shape, doesn't blend in. It's not a camouflage. It is true 100% concealment. It's true invisibility. So that's fun facts about Harry's invisibility cloak. But I just think it's so funny that Dumbledore chooses this moment to call Harry out, like, without calling his name out specifically. And Harry and Ron know because they, like, glance at each other. And Hermione knows, too, because she knows about the cloak. But I just think it's funny. And then Dumbledore goes on to say, like, Dementors are not understanding. They don't, they're not forgiving. Like, don't give any of them any reason to harm you. And he tells the prefects, like, I look to the prefects and our new head boy and girl to make sure that no student runs afoul of the Dementors. And this Percy, of course, is the head boy and he feels very important. And he's, like, sitting up straight again and puffing his chest down and looking around and, you know, being the way he is. So, and everyone is completely quiet, just watching Dumbledore in this moment. And, you know, it's silence. And then he's like, well, happier note now. We have two new teachers. So he introduces Lupin as Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And there's some scattered applause. Only the ones who were in the compartment train with Lupin during the Dementor thing are the ones who are clapping. So that's like the trio and Neville and Jenny. They're clapping hard because they've seen firsthand that this guy knows what he's doing, that he did the Patronus charm. He knew how to do the chocolate. Like, they're like, okay, we're in good hands. Like, I'm excited for this guy. And again, there's another mention of how he looks particularly shabby next to all of the other teachers. And so Ron tells Harry, like, he, like, tells him in his ear, like, look at Snape. And Snape, you know, the potions master, looks extremely, like, angry. It's even beyond anger. It's described as loathing. I mean, we all know that Snape, all the students know that Snape wants the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. That's the job he's always wanted. And so, like, yeah, that's why. But also, Snape hates Lupin. Hates Lupin because of childhood grudges. So it's like just a twisted, loathing expression. And Harry recognizes that expression. He knows it all too well because that's the expression that he gives to Harry. That expression on Snape's face is the way that he looks at Harry. So that's, you know, not great, but we all know Snape has his reasons for being the way he is. And then the second teacher, that the new teacher that Dumbledore is announcing, is Hagrid, because he says Professor Kettleborn, who was the Care of Magical Creatures teacher, retired at the end of last year because he wants to enjoy his some more time with his remaining limbs. So that's why that teacher is gone. But our new teacher is going to be Rubeus Hagrid. He's going to be teaching in addition to keeping up with his gamekeeping duties. So the trio, this is news, is a surprise to them. They look around at each other and they're just stunned. They're so excited. This is a huge surprise to them, and the trio, and, like, you know, all the Gryffindors, they are all clapping so hard. The entire Great Hall is, Slytherin probably not so much, but the Great Hall is clapping. Like, Gryffindors, Ravenclaws, Hufflepuffs in particular are excited, and Gryffindor especially, and out of the Gryffindors, the trio, like, especially, they're very excited for him. And Ron is like, oh, of course we should have known. Who else would have given us a biting book? So that's true. That's like a, it's true. Like, that's a big indicator. That was a hint that, like, Hagrid was going to be the teacher, because it's so obvious now that they look back on it, right? So Harry, Ron, and Hermione were the last to stop clapping. And I love that. They're so supportive of their friend. They're so supportive of Hagrid. And so Dumbledore waits until they stop clapping to resume again. Like, he knows that they love Hagrid, and he loves Hagrid. So he's like, yeah, I'll let them clap as long as they want. And he just waits till they stop to begin speaking again. And at this display of affection, the support and applause for Hagrid that the trio is doing, Hagrid is, like, wiping his eyes with a cloth because he's just so overwhelmed with, like, that emotion. So I love that they're being so supportive. Then Dumbledore says, okay, that was all that I had to announce. Let the feast begin. And suddenly they have the entire spread out in front of them, and it's a delicious feast. But we don't get a description of the food. Usually there's, like, a nice little description of what they're eating, but especially the welcome feast. There's not now, but it was a delicious feast nonetheless, and they enjoyed it. They're excited for this year, especially because Hagrid, he isn't necessarily, like, a fully qualified wizard, because he was expelled from Hogwarts in his third year, so the age that Harry, Ron, Hermione are now, for a crime he did not commit, which was opening the Chamber of Secrets. He got expelled for that. Remember, he got sent to Azkaban in the second book, so, like, a few months ago in this timeline right now. He got sent to Azkaban for the Chamber of Secrets again, because Fudge just wanted it to make it look like he was doing something about it. But yeah, so we don't know what their, like, food is, but for their desserts, they had some pumpkin tart, and everyone eats and enjoys, and then they go off to bed. And so before they go off to bed, actually, the trio, they decide to go to the teacher's table and congratulate Hagrid, and then Hagrid's, like, still, like, wiping his, like, tears, and he's like, I can't believe it. I'm so excited. Dumbledore's a great man. He came straight down to me after Professor Kettleborn said that he was retiring, and, like, he's saying it was what he's always wanted, and he's just overcome with emotion. But McGonagall tells them to go off to bed because they got to go to class in the morning. So the trio goes up to the Gryffindor Tower through the portrait of the fat lady. And Percy, you know, being ever so important, and he has the password because he's a prefect, he says the new password is Fortuna Major. And Neville is the one who always forgets passwords, so he's like, oh no, like, he has trouble remembering a lot of things, and passwords is one of them. And so, like, Neville is like, oh no, like, a reminder that I'm gonna have to memorize more passwords and forget. This is also, like, a really big hint here, because Neville, he decides to write down the passwords later this year. Once Sirius Black scares the fat lady because she won't let him into Gryffindor Tower, the fat lady needs, like, a little break, a little time to be away from the job, right? A sabbatical, I guess. And so Sir Cadogan is a portrait, like a knight painting portrait. He's the only one that will take the job. And so he does, but he keeps changing the password, like, constantly. This is a few months from now. He's constantly changing the password, and just, like, it's hard on Neville because Neville has a really hard time remembering. He has trouble remembering these passwords. So he writes down all of the passwords on a piece of paper. And this is really bad because he loses that piece of paper. And those passwords are how Sirius Black gets into Gryffindor Tower later in this book. So a little bit of foreshadowing there with Neville being like, oh no, like, more passwords that I'm going to have to remember. And it's unrealistic. Sir Cadogan, he changes them, like, way too much. It's unrealistic. But even without all the password changes, like, that frequently, Neville still has a hard time remembering, like, only a few per year. So they get through the common room. The girls go into their, like, on their staircase, and Harry and Ron go to theirs. And Harry has no thoughts in his head, just good vibes. All he could think about is how happy he is to be back. So I'm going to read this last sentence because I love it. They reach their familiar circular dormitory with its 5 four-poster beds. And Harry, looking around, felt he was home at last. So that's a great way to end the chapter. I love when Harry is happy. He just had a rough experience with the Dementors on the train and everything. But Hagrid's teaching this year. They have a good defense against a dark arts teacher now, it seems. And he's back home. He's away from Dursley's. He's back at home with Hogwarts with his best friends. in the magic, in the wizarding world, despite the Dementors being there, he feels fine because Dumbledore's there. Dumbledore is going to keep him safe. Dumbledore is calming, is a calming presence, is a comfort to him. So Harry's feeling good. He's like, you know, he's got the new school year ahead of him and he's looking forward to it. So this is a really cool chapter, huge, like, learning about the Dementors. And it's not the first, or sorry, this is the first time we've seen them, but it's definitely not the last. Their presence is very much an ominous one, very dark. It's interesting. J.K. Rowling, she created these based off of, like, her depression, these Dementors. That's a really great way to, like, see it. That's kind of, like, what they are. They're, like, just sadness. And I absolutely love Prisoner of Azkaban, of course. I love Harry Potter. But Prisoner of Azkaban is one of my favorites, book and movie of the series. And Expecto Patronum, the Patronus charm, which is the one against Dementors. That's my favorite spell of the whole series, is Expecto Patronum, for so many reasons. And I'll get into that later on when Harry learns more about it, because I think that's, like, a better point in the podcast to talk about it. But I absolutely love, love, love Expecto Patronum. That Patronus charm is my favorite spell. I actually have it tattooed. I have 3 Harry Potter tattoos. The first two, I actually got them on the same day, like, one right after the other. So I guess Expecto Patronum is technically my second one, because I got it after my Deathly Hallows one. Like, that, the Deathly Hallows one took like 10 minutes and my Expecto Patronum one took like half an hour. But I have Expecto Patronum tattooed in the Harry Potter font, because it's just my favorite spell. I absolutely love it. And I'm so excited. We're going to keep getting into this. Like, this book, it just keeps getting better every chapter. Like, it's so good. So I hope you enjoyed talking, or I guess listening to me talk, about the Dementors and Harry's journey leading up to this point and where it's just going to keep going from here. So a lot of fun stuff. Next week's episode is going to be chapter 6, Talons and Tea Leaves. Another good chapter, like some more foreshadowing for sure. Some hints at what Hermione's up to with the Time Turner, Sirius Black, Peter Pettigrew. Like, there's with Lupin, like, there's some cool stuff coming up. Like, I'm so excited to continue with Prisoner of Azkaban. So I just want to remind everybody, you guys can email me at theheirsofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is Heirs of Slytherin Podcast. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. And you guys can leave a donation or voice message in the Anchor link. And you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And for next week's episode, be sure to read Chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Talons and Tea Leaves. Thank you for listening to The Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Mikaela, your host.